And welcome to Make Audio. I'm Philip Tarone, Associate Editor of Make Magazine. And for the next half an hour, we're going to be talking with Joshua Paul, Editor of Digital Video Hacks, Tips and Tools for Shooting, Editing, and Sharing Video. We talked to him about a lot of things, how to build a lot of stuff like Steadicams, booms, dollies, all sorts of things that I thought would be really handy to have when you shoot digital video. So, here we go. All right, I'm here with Josh Paul, author of Digital Video Hacks. Josh, you there?
Yes, I am.
So, Digital Video Hacks just came out. I saw it in the bookstore. It looks great. Congratulations on it. So this book is about tips and tools for shooting, editing, and sharing digital video. You know, a lot of people have digital video cameras, and I see them, they buy them, and they ask me questions about them, and then they record a bunch of stuff right away, and then they have tapes, and these tapes go on the shelves or whatever. What's the biggest barrier, the thing that makes shooting good video so hard, and why do people get so frustrated and just kind of, you know, stop shooting video after a while?
I think part of it is actually having a plan in mind. You know, just going out and shooting general video doesn't really get you anywhere other than recording events. And a big thing is really telling a story. Something I'm currently working on, of all things, is my son just turned 1 year old, or 1 year old, and just gathering all the footage that I've recorded over the last year in order to kind of tell the story of his first year of life. But having a story in mind when you approach a project is essentially the biggest hurdle that you have to overcome. And the more footage you have, the more daunting it is, especially on large projects. A couple of years ago, when I first started dabbling in digital video, initially planned on shooting a little short 3-minute video and turned into well over 60 hours of footage that we then spent 6 to 9 months editing down to 40 minutes. And that's just, we went in with a plan, we went in with a script, and things just kind of spun out of control. And sooner or later, you just got to wrangle it in, bite the bullet, and actually do it. But if you have a good plan in mind and you stick to it, it's actually not too difficult to really get through a project and complete it successfully.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of the first year of, you know, life of your son, because that's kind of interesting, because you can then plot out specific events and things and, you know, kind of always have the footage that you can, you know, take a tape and label it and put it away. Once you get this footage, or once anyone gets footage, what do they usually do with it afterwards? I mean, the thing that I always hear is like, oh, I have it on tape and I'll plug it into TV. Do you find people are starting to put stuff on DVDs, or do they really need a project and editing in mind and all that to really kind of complete the process?
I find that editing just makes it more compelling. It's just a lot more interesting to watch a story, especially when somebody adds just some small effects, even dissolves and things along those lines, make it easier to watch. And then also when you have the opportunity to add things like music to really drive a story forward and add emotions and things along those lines, just makes the video that much more enjoyable to watch, and you're much more likely to show it to somebody to have them enjoy it and not just kind of grit their teeth and bear, you know, get through it.
Do you think it's getting easier for people to do things with video now that, you know, Mac ship with video software and PC ship with video editing software now? Do you think it's getting easier?
I think it's getting much easier. Years ago, when I kind of first entered this realm, we were using a big linear, you know, tape-to-tape machines, and nothing was really digital. And as kind of, you know, machines like Avid came around and enabled us to do this non-linear editing and non-destructive editing, and you can really get more creative. And if you're familiar with a computer and comfortable on a computer, you know that you really can't damage anything unless you really go out of your way. And if you're comfortable in that realm, then you should feel fairly comfortable experimenting and seeing what works and what doesn't. And I've seen some really interesting projects come out of just independent people around who were experimenting, as instead of, you know, the people who went to film school and have certain genres or certain mindsets. And the whole concept of being able to edit video and put it online is especially intriguing to me, because there's so many new things to learn from other people, especially around the world.
And so do you think, you know, BitTorrent is going to be in BitTorrent, you know, the peer-to-peer sharing protocol to share large files? Do you think Do you think that's going to change things too?
I sincerely hope so. I know that it's kind of getting a bad rap in the press as a way for people to illegally share movies, but I just see such a huge opportunity for independent producers who can't get their shows on TV or don't have that type of money or contacts or, you know, aren't even in the right city to have access to the big editing machines and all these things that you really need to make a broadcast quality video. Being able to do it and put it out there, and the bandwidth charges have always been that obstacle. And with BitTorrent, it's not. You know, you have these initial first seeds that you have to send out, and then after that, everybody who's watching your video kind of helps distribute it. And the more popular it gets, it just doesn't cost you any more. And I just think it's such a great solution to that technical problem and that financial problem that we were running into. And to say I'm excited is just an understatement. And I sincerely hope that it can overcome this bad rap that it's really gotten.
Yeah, well, you know, didn't Edison pirate movies, get movies started in the beginning or something like that? And doesn't all great technologies kind of start out as piracy? Before I ask you about the hacks in the book, which I've been reading these, and these are really great. I get asked this a lot, so I figure I may as well just, you know, ask someone who just wrote a book about it. If someone's shopping around for a digital video camera right now, you know, nothing professional, just something that can shoot great video, what's a good one that they should check out or consider?
It all depends on what you want to do. Up until a couple of months ago, I was really big on mini DV tapes, and I actually still am. I'm very big on the HDV format, which is coming out, and I'm seeing a lot of interest, at least inside the television industry, of people looking at that format and seeing what we can do with it, because it's really cheap and high quality. But at the same time, I just picked up this little Nikon Coolpix camera, which shoots video, and it can shoot up to 640 by 40, which is essentially broadcast quality, standard definition, very close to it, and also shoots lower qualities. And you can stick a 1 gigabyte card in here and shoot 47 minutes of video somewhere along those lines. It's even longer if you shoot lower quality. And, I mean, this is something that fits in your pocket.
Hmm. So what format does it shoot to, like MPEG or QuickTime, or what's the format?
The ones I've been seeing are shooting MPEG 4. I've seen some, I believe it's Kodak or Olympus, that are shooting QuickTime, most likely MPEG 4 with just a QuickTime wrapper. I haven't really explored all of the options out there. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I just picked this one up, and it's kind of a fun little camera, just something you can carry around with you, and you don't have to. Even the smaller mini DV cameras aren't something you can really stick in your pocket.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to see what people start doing with these.
And does it take regular digital photos too? What's the megapixel on it?
Megapixel on this one is 5.1.
Oh, that's pretty good.
It's actually a pretty good camera for what
so
it is.
So, do you think that we'll see these kind of these digital camera manufacturers start to inch their way into the world of digital video cameras that normally, you know, you have your player, your big guys out there that have been doing this for years, and now you've got these little camera manufacturers. If you're shooting 640 by 480 and you can get almost up to an hour, that's pretty good. Do you think they'll make their ways into the digital video camera world?
It's possible. I think they're going to make a dent. You know, I kind of get two birds with one stone on this one. I get a very high-resolution camera as well as a little video camera I can carry around and, you know, drop the video and even the photos into a timeline on an editing machine and go ahead and edit a video together. It's going to be very interesting to see where people take these. And I think each niche kind of has its market. Panasonic at the recent NAB convention announced their new little format, I believe it's called P2, which shoots all different ranges, and I think that's probably the direction we're going to go. Mm-hmm. Just like this little Nikon that I have that shoots three different sizes of video, as we start getting bigger and bigger SD cards and flash cards and all those things, as they start getting in 4 gigabyte and who knows where we're going to go, you're probably going to have a very small camera that's going to be shooting high def in the very near future, and it's really, really exciting. I'm very curious to see what people from around the world can put together. really, really exciting time, at least for me.
All right, on to the hacks. So you've got a bunch of hacks. It's a hack book. I'm going to ask you about some things. The first one that caught my eye is an Apple box. So these normally sell for like $34, and it's a box, and you should make these. What do you use an Apple box for?
You can use them for essentially anything. They are quite essentially a box of wood. I mean, that's really what it is. They have certain dimensions that they range quarter apple box, half apple box, etc. And you can do anything from them. If you need to get a shot from a little higher, you can use them as a step stool. If you need to hang some green screen cloth off of something, you can actually staple things to them. They're really just kind of a workhorse. And, you know, within the movie and television industry, you see them all over the place. And it's just something that we kind of overlook and don't really think of as a hack, and yet it is. I mean, these things are just really an essential part of production when it really comes down to it. I don't see many people necessarily lugging around 10 of these in their trunk when they go around shooting around town, but they really come in use, especially when you are trying to shoot something of a more professional level and you're really planning your shots and trying to, if you're trying to enter a film festival or something along those lines, having a few of them around is definitely going to be handy.
Gotcha. Remote control camera. So you talk about how to control your camera remotely, and then you got this neat little device from Memorex that allows you to do pan and tilt. What is that all about?
That hack was actually a contribution from one of the many contributors within the book. And essentially it's just useful if you have a small crew, even if two or three people. Having a remote control camera can be really useful to stand back and, you know, do those things, pan and tilt and focus. If you want to set up surveillance cameras around your house or apartment building, it's really just a matter of this is something you can do, and I'm really hoping that people out there think outside the box and get creative with it. Whether or not somebody finds a way to attach that to the car mount, which we talk about, and, you know, do some remote control within their car, I have no idea, but I'm very curious to see if people start to get creative with some of the hacks inside and mashing those together.
Next up, there's protecting your camera outdoors, and you use a PVC pipe for that. That's a pretty interesting hack in terms of getting a camera outside. Can you tell me why you'd want to do that and how that came about?
Actually, again, that's another contribution. And I'm very, very fortunate to have a great set of contributors, including yourself, on this book. essentially, you know, depending on where you live, even if you live in Arizona or, you know, the southwest of the United States, you definitely want to protect your camera when it's outdoors, whether it's from rain, dust, or anything, you know, that Mother Nature might throw at us. And also, if you want to get creative again, you can camouflage those and try to hide your camera setups a little easier so that hopefully somebody doesn't take off with them. It's really just a matter of protecting the camera. You're making a hefty investment in it.
Yeah.
And for a small amount more, you can set up this PVC setup that allows you to maintain that investment over time.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty clever because the outdoor enclosures are really expensive, and then I saw this, and I'm like, wow, just a PVC pipe, that's pretty good.
Plastic holds up pretty well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Next up, the blue screen, how to build one, and it's pretty extensive. That was one of the ones that I really enjoyed reading. First off, when do you need to use a blue screen? I'm sure most people know, but just for the folks that don't.
Again, this sounds like there are a lot of contributors in the book, and there are, but that was another contribution. Setting up a blue screen is just a way of placing a solid colored background. Predominantly, you want to use blue or green behind a scene so that you can do compositing. And what you can do is, let's say you shoot somebody in front of the green screen, you can lay that into a timeline, and there are various techniques you can use which are outlined in the book, and most editing systems can handle it. Where you essentially remove that green from the scene, or blue, and can paint in anything behind there you want. So if you wanted to place your son or yourself or your wife, husband, whatever, on Mars, you can do that. You can shoot somebody in front of the blue screen, bring that into your editing system, composite that out, and grab some footage of Mars, probably from NASA, and drop that behind your scene, and all of a sudden you've created this sci-fi adventure. So if you are looking to travel the world, anything along those lines, you can just set up green screen and shoot it. There are various ways to set up blue screen. I know that the one we outlined in the book involves taking some blue tarps that you might use, let's say for a kitchen, for a picnic or something along those lines. There's also a company in Burbank which sells chroma key blue and chroma key green fabric, and it's kind of like a felt that works really nicely, and you can essentially just roll it up and place it against a wall or anything you want to do. And it's actually very lightweight and very functional. And then if you want to go all out, you can actually paint your walls. So it depends on what you want to do.
And most of the software packages nowadays have compositing in them so that you can do this pretty easily?
The vast majority do. Trying to remember, iMovie and Movie Maker may not, but I'm fairly certain there are plugins out there.
Yeah.
Specific plugins I can't name off the top of my head, but it's a pretty standard thing once you start getting into digital video to realize that, hey, I'm not really limited to what my camera can do. And so
it's a matter of what you want to build.
That's very true. Yeah, it's a matter of what can you envision and what do you want to do, and learning the tools and doing it. But because of that, there are a number of people out there that write plugins, and even for the packages that do come bundled with, say, Final Cut Pro or Adobe Premiere or even Avid, there are third-party products that go above and beyond whatever's included. So it depends on how fine-grained control you want to get.
Right, the next one I saw that I thought was pretty clever was called Roll Your Own Dolly, different ways of making a dolly. Can you tell me about some of the more interesting or unusual ways that people are doing this?
You really just, again, it's a matter of thinking outside the box. I've seen people use various things. What fascinated me was a few years ago was being on set of a show called The Larry Sanders Show, and the director of photography was on rollerblades. And this is a very high-quality professional TV show. It was on HBO, won a number of Emmy Awards. And the dolly that their cameraman, Peter Smoker, used was a pair of rollerblades, and he would be skating around, and that was that. And as soon as I saw that, I realized, like, wow, you can really get creative here. You don't have to go out and purchase these tracks of systems. And I mean, you really have to see some of these setups that people have for dollies. Can't even imagine how much they cost, but there's no reason why you can't slap on a pair of rollerblades or, you know, put your camera on a baby carriage. Actually, there's a woman currently walking the streets of Los Angeles. She's doing a video blog, and I think it's Walk LA or Walk With Me, something along those lines. And she just has a video camera and a baby carriage, and she's walking the streets of Los Angeles and videotaping herself, having conversations with people on the street. And so she's found a way to use a dolly kind of for her own use as opposed to shooting somebody else. She's shooting herself. And I thought that was actually pretty interesting.
So the camera's pointed back at her as she pushes the carriage along, and she's recording that.
Correct, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and there have been some very compelling conversations as well. I'm very intrigued by the video blogging sphere, and that's a really, really exciting area that I'm kind of watching and chiming in on once in a while. But other things that I've seen people do and actually use myself are wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. I do make a note in the book to avoid the temptation to use a motorized chair because your camera will more than likely pick up that hum of the motor, and that's just going to cause more problems in your audio sweetening or your audio mix. There's tons of things.
Anything with wheels, huh?
Essentially, yeah. You know, using a skateboard or a longboard if you want to get some really low angle shots. Essentially anything with wheels that you want to, you know, put your body on or your camera on, you can essentially use as a dolly.
So another one that kind of leaped out at me was the lighting of all this. I think that I've seen, and you've probably seen, we've all seen just poorly lit videos, and it seems like that's one of the biggest challenges or things that just makes people not really want to shoot video after they see the results. What are some lighting tips that you can tell folks to consider? What's the most important thing? Does it go outside all the time, or can you put together a pretty cheap lighting kit for indoors yourself?
We actually have a little hack in there, again, a contribution on how to put together a cheap lighting kit. I have a friend who traveled over Cambodia, I believe, to shoot a documentary and had to travel very lightly and at the same time had to have the proper equipment to light scenes correctly. And so it's laid out in there how to assemble at least a very cheap lighting kit. And there are little things you can do. One is diffusion is a big thing. If you have a very harsh light, diffusing it essentially softens light, knocks it down, and doesn't make it as harsh on your subject. And one of the things we outline in the book is using baking paper, which can withstand really high heat because they use it to bake with. And it's usually very opaque, kind of white paper that you can just place over a light, tape over a light, clip over a light, whatever you need to do in order to knock it down a little. Another thing is using the little tiny camera lights that sit on top of your camera, if you have a little mini DV camera, mm-hmm. Using those to light. And again, if you find that that's a little harsh, one of the things we outline in the book is covering the light with Scotch tape, of all things, and that knocks down the light a little bit and just softens it and doesn't make it quite as focused and as harsh and kind of just diffuses it a little and gives everything a little softer of a light. The biggest thing is really just looking at your subject, looking through the camera, seeing what you're getting, and monitoring what you get. Another thing, not really related to lighting, but I would love to mention, is about audio. And if there's any way, even if you have to plug in a set of headphones on your camera to hear what you're recording, it's a huge thing, because personally, and what I've found, most people are willing to watch bad quality video if the audio is there and if the story is compelling. Mm-hmm. And audio, although it takes such a small part of the signal of video, that audio signal is so important. And if you can get a good audio signal, you can usually recover anything else, whether through color correction or boosting your brightness and things along those lines. But if you have bad audio, there's nothing you can really do to recover it. You can remove hums and things along those lines, but if your audio is blown out, good luck recovering it.
Gotcha.
So, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, on the lighting subject, I noticed you also have a tip about the pantyhose filter that seems to... I was looking at the before and afters that you have, and it looks pretty neat. It just softens the picture. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Do you just throw a pantyhose over a lens and it works?
Essentially, yeah. That was another contribution from Derek Story, who is actually an author for O'Reilly as well.
Yeah, we've had him on the show before.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He essentially introduced that hack, and it's quite interesting. You just essentially throw a pair of pantyhose over your lens, and it causes that diffusion effect, which is really nice. Just softens the image a little bit, doesn't make it quite as harsh. And from what I recall, he recommends using various weights, I believe they are, of pantyhose, and different thicknesses will give you different levels of diffusion. And it's a matter of trial and error. See what you like. That's one thing that all of this comes down to, is it's an artistic medium. So feel free to experiment and see what you get out, and just push it forward.
Yeah, it's not like we're really wasting tape so much anymore. You can just, try stuff, and if it doesn't work, just record over it or whatever. You've got a great tip that, I've known about it, but I remember when I had the aha moment and I think I had read about it, but this is a good one for anyone who wants to record what's going on a television or on their computer monitor. Can you tell me how to get rid of that flicker that comes on that when you record the TV? How do you get rid of that?
Oddly enough, it's a matter of turning off the image stabilization on your camera.
And that's it.
Essentially, yes. the image stabilization, for whatever reason, kind of picks up on that flicker. You may notice some very slight strobing even when you do turn it off, but nothing that's as distractive as when you have that image stabilization on. And when dealing with computer monitors, depending on if you're shooting PAL or NTSC, I'm going to talk about NTSC because we are in North America, you want to have your refresh rate on your monitor in a multiple of 30. So if you can get it at 60 hertz or 90 hertz, whatever it is, that'll help, because when you're dealing with NTSC and frame rates, it all comes back to electrical impulses and all this fun stuff. And essentially, because we're at 60 hertz, we come down to 30 frames per second, 60 fields, one up and one down, and then gets even more technical because color takes a little longer, so we wind up at 2997, and there's a whole bunch of technical reasons there. But essentially, if you're shooting a computer monitor, you want to be at a multiple of whatever your frame rate is.
Gotcha. And then you're set. The flicker will go away, and you can just basically record anything on the screen, and it'll look as pristine as anything else. Is that
about as good as you can get it until you start getting into professional equipment? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You may notice a very, very slight kind of redraw that you notice on the TV or the monitor. But again, it's nothing in comparison to when image stabilization is on. And if anybody's listening to this that wants to try it, pull out your camera and just hit that switch that turns your stabilization on and off, and you'll see a dramatic difference.
That's great. All right, well, the last two that I want to ask you about is I saw that you can create 3D video.
Yes.
Is that really possible? Can you really create 3D video?
It actually is. It's not the easiest thing in the world, and I don't know if it's really expressed in the book, that, you know, it can be quite difficult to do. But there are a couple of things. One is to set up two cameras. You want them about 3 inches apart. And when you're shooting your subjects, you want to make sure they're not moving too much in and out of focus. The main thing that's going to give you that 3D effect is whatever's in the background. And the shot in the book isn't really indicative of that. But getting the two cameras side by side gives you that, you know, the same effect that the human mind encounters using two eyeballs. Mm-hmm. So by having the two cameras essentially 3 inches apart or close to, you're going to have a slight offset in your image. And because of that, when you use those funky 3D glasses, and we outline all the steps you have to take in the book, you can line up your image and actually get that separation between the background and your subject. Another effect is, I believe, called the Pulfrick effect. And that is essentially if you have one lens on a pair of glasses that's grayed out, or an opaque gray, and the other lens is clear, when subjects move right to left or left to right, the brain processes the left eye and the right eye differently due to the gray lens. And because of that, items will appear in 3D, in a sense. And you can actually experiment with this just by taking a pair of sunglasses, knocking out a lens and watching something like basketball or football on TV, and you'll actually get some of that effect once in a while.
Hmm. You'll be able to see, it'll look a little 3D.
It gives you a little bit of a 3D effect. The TV show Third Rock from the Sun, I don't remember how many years ago, did an episode based on that same principle. Hmm. And the nice thing is, when going and using that effect, is anybody who's not wearing the glasses still sees the show as it's supposed to be, or the video, whatever you're shooting. So it's kind of a nice compromise.
Yeah.
You do have to really plan out your shots well in order to pull it off. But as opposed to doing the other effect, the anaglyph effect, when you have, you know, a blue image and a green and a red image and trying to match them up, and that's kind of hard on the eyes if you don't have the right glasses. And even when you do have the right glasses, it can be uncomfortable.
All right. And so the last one, you know, your book has tons of stuff about, you know, shooting video, putting digital effects, and neat audio and video tricks and DVD stuff and, you know, great things for TV and all that. But what if you like putting video on your PDA or phone? I like to do that. But, you know, one thing that I don't like, and I'm sure folks who are listening don't like, is it's always hard. It's never easy. You have to have, like, five different conversion tools or whatever. You've got a pretty big section about how to get video on different devices. Which device do you think does the best job at playing video and displaying video or just getting video on it?
Oh, wow.
Or do they all...
That's a tough one.
Are they all awful equally?
It all depends on your personal taste. I mean, you are talking about a fairly small size on your screen. So it really kind of depends on your personal taste. I personally use the Trio 650, which at least has a little bit of a larger screen size, and I'm able to play some 3G video.
What do you use to convert your video to get them onto the phone usually?
Like, let's say I actually just use QuickTime Pro.
Do export and it exports it right to the format?
Yeah, it exports it right to the format. I drop it onto the card and away we go. Trying to think of some of the other tools that we outline in there. It all depends on the format that your device takes.
Yeah, I've used Kinoma for any of the Palm OS stuff. That seems to work out okay. And then for Pocket PC or smart or Windows mobile devices, usually Windows Media will play almost straight out.
Yes.
So those are the ones that I've played around with. But
it's been very interesting. Yeah.
Do you think a lot of people have been converting videos for handhelds? Do you think it's going to be something that we see a lot, or do you think we're always just going to, just use it for novelty because there's not a heck of a lot of enjoyment out of a 2 or 3 inch screen?
To be honest, I think a lot of people are experimenting with it to see what we can do with it. I do know some people, especially those that are able to commute using public transportation, are throwing videos on their devices. And if I use public transportation, I probably would. I think that's a great way to pass the time, especially, on the train or something along those lines. I haven't really used it in flight. Unfortunately, I usually wind up writing some code or something. But I'm very curious to see what happens, and I would love to see a device that allowed us to play video out. I know there are a few out there. And now that the PlayStation Portable is out, and I've seen some of the video on that, which is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
It is going to be very interesting to see where we go with it and whether or not people are willing to watch on the small screen. And when I say small screen, I mean really small screen.
Well, one thing, and I'm going to end our interview in a second, but I just want to get your thoughts on this. It seems like there is a big issue with getting DVDs onto other devices because you can't really do it legally. You can take a CD from the store that you bought and put it on your computer and put it in iTunes or whatever and put it on an iPod or whatever music player. But you can't do it for movies and for DVDs at all. And we have all these portable video players, and it seems like that needs to happen for these little portable video players to flourish because you can't – I mean, it's even hard probably as an author. You probably couldn't, as much as you'd want to do a whole chapter on how to get videos off DVDs, but you really can't. Do you think we're going to see anything anytime soon change?
Oh, God, I would hope so. I mean, it seems kind of odd that I can buy my music and it's accepted that I can rip that and put it on my iPod and that's completely legal, but I can't go out and buy the latest hit DVD and rip that and put it on my portable video device. Seems kind of just not right. And I'm sure I'll be blackballed within the movie industry for saying that. But nonetheless, if I bought the DVD, I think I should have every right to. And there are some things you can do that allow you to do it. Probably falls under fair use. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but if you purchase a video, yeah, I completely agree that you should be able to view it where you want. I'm very curious to see where all of this leads, and I believe people want to be able to do that, and I think that's why we are seeing some people actually doing it, one way or another.
I get emails
the legal
all the time.
Issues are solved.
And I get the email that someone bought a portable video player, and they're like, I'm trying to drag the DVD over to the portable video device, and it says it won't copy, like my CD, so
right.
Something needs to change. Well, Josh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Josh's book is Digital Video Hacks from O'Reilly. There'll be links to it on the show notes. Josh, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Josh. For more information about Digital Video Hacks, tips and tools for shooting, editing, and sharing video, show notes, and to subscribe to Make Magazine, visit makezine.com.